My heartfelt advice to everyone is to keep it simple, just to keep it totally simple. And what could be more simple than awareness, our own awareness? Without awareness, no one would know anything. So there isn't anything at all that can possibly be known without awareness. Awareness is the vital knower, the flawless knower, the stainless knower of everything. And the light of awareness, this lamp of awareness that is all-knowing or omniscient, is the radiance that is inseparable from everything that appears, no matter what it is. So another term we could use to describe awareness is superintelligence or supreme intelligence. Another word we could use is wisdom. All of us can relate to being aware. All of us can relate to being intelligent. And this awareness, this intelligence, mind itself, all these words, they're synonymous. Mind, awareness, intelligence, they're all synonymous. They're not separate activities. There's no separation anywhere. So to just rest as this super intelligence, rest as this meta intelligence that is at the basis of everything, is to begin to be able to see, initially to begin to be able to see that within this awareness there are many points of view that are constantly appearing, and that these points of view within the all-encompassing view of awareness, within the all-encompassing superintelligence, all these points of view are completely unpredictable. They are unpredictable, and not only are they unpredictable, but they are ceaseless and countless. So there is never an end anywhere in sight to the multiplicity of appearances, to the multiplicity and the multitude of information that appears within awareness. And whatever information, whatever the points of view are that appear within awareness, and information and points of view are synonymous as well. All of these things, no matter what they are, they're inseparable from awareness. They're inseparable from the superintelligence. So in that, whatever appears is absolutely equal. There's never been inequality anywhere. Inequality only seems to be so when there is a belief in descriptions, when the dictionary is our Bible, so to speak. That means we believe in the descriptions that are in the dictionary, and this is the case for many people worldwide, but not for all people, certainly, that these descriptions in the dictionary are believed in as having an independent identity, that they're seen to be something real that exists in and of themselves, that is separate from this super intelligence, this meta awareness that is the source of everything. Awareness, the awareness that is beyond all descriptions whatsoever. And so, but yet it includes all descriptions. So, you know, many of us, we plod on through our entire life only looking at some of the information and taking that to be our identity. And so this would be like looking through a low-powered telescope at a certain section of the sky. Through a low-powered telescope, you can only see a few planets and stars, a few things going on. But through a high-powered telescope, you can see the vast expanse of space, and you can see it quite clearly. You can see everything going on. So within our own being, it's the same thing. If we take our thoughts and emotions to be the information that comprises our identity, then we have a very limited scope. We have an exceedingly limited scope of reference for what reality is. And we can be self-righteous, absolutely sure we're right about all the thoughts and emotions we have, and we can really believe in them and believe that that is our identity. We're totally free to be whatever we want to be in this regard. However, if we take this limited scope of reference about who we are to be real, then we'll suffer, and at least part of the time. And no matter how happy we are, at some point we will get into a real pickle of suffering. In other words, say we plod along in our life and we have happy points of view and somehow we're able to maintain happiness all of the time. At some point we will be thrust into immeasurable suffering, suffering that we couldn't even believe could ever happen to us, suffering that for which we'll have no frame of reference. And this can occur in all manner of ways. You know, it can occur from being faced with a sudden illness that we didn't expect to have in ourselves or someone else. Or it can be our death, our own death, whether that death is something that we can see coming in the future or whether it happens to us unexpectedly. Say we're unexpectedly faced with death. Boom, all of a sudden we're going to be dead, and we'll have at least an instant of the immeasurable suffering of recognizing that and not understanding what it is. So you see, this is all from having a very limited scope of reference about who we are. When we just see some of the information within a vast field of information as who we are, rather than all of that information is who we are, then we have at least some suffering in our life. But for most people, there's a great deal of suffering. In fact, every day is a roller coaster ride of ups and downs. We have a happy thought and, oh, we're at the top of the roller coaster hill and, oh, we feel so free and isn't it wonderful? And then all of a sudden we have another thought and an emotion that goes along and the roller coaster plummets into a dark tunnel and all of a sudden we're out over the ocean and the roller coaster's taking a sharp turn. I actually went on a roller coaster like this on the Jersey Shore at one time in my youth. And I never rode on a roller coaster again. So you see, I'm not a stupid person. I had no idea. I had no desire whatsoever to have my emotions ripped off by all kinds of things when that was going on within me all the time, you know. So here, that summer I had several pivotal experiences, and this was one of them. I went on a roller coaster, and oh, it looked so much fun. I was maybe, 12 or 13 at the time. And so I was just sort of coming out of my family shell. My parents had allowed me to go to the home of friends, and they weren't there, and they had a home at the shore, and so we were all there. And so here I was on the roller coaster, and it looked fun. You know, it starts out, it's kind of these low little curves, and it's pleasant, and you can kind of feel your tummy go up and down. But pretty soon I was cast into this hell that I found quite frightening. And at one point then we went through this really dark place, and of course when you're in there you're thinking, oh good, I'm going to be out soon. But when we came out, the roller coaster was over the ocean, and it looked like we were going to go plummeting right into the ocean. But then suddenly it made a sharp turn to the left, and we were, oh my gosh. I was sure it was all over, you know. It was absolutely horrible. And so I vowed to never go on a roller coaster again, and I never have. And then also on that trip, I saw my first and last vampire movie. Well, so, you know, my parents didn't allow me to see things like that. But in this more progressive family, we went to see a vampire movie. And in this movie, driving stakes into the heart, sucking blood from people's necks. Now, you know, these are the deranged and confused points of view of one mind that then are trying to reach out to the confused and deranged points of view of other minds and kind of lure them in. So, you know, I went home that night and I was terrified. I had the lights on. I couldn't go to sleep. And this is actually true. I was looking for some garlic to hang over. the doorway. So, you know, I thought there's got to be some garlic here somewhere. Well, you know, then I just went and I lay in my bed and I thought, what is going on with life? Why are all these things going on? Vampire movies, roller coasters that people say are fun, but I found them terrifying. Movies that are they're supposed to be a source of enjoyment. People want to see these, but I found no enjoyment in it whatsoever. And so again, I said, well, no more roller coasters for me and no more vampire movies either. And I haven't done either thing since. And so my sister Mary, who died about 10 years ago, was 10 months younger, and we were very close. And she had a term she used for movies or experiences like this, and she said that they were experiences that were emotional rip-offs. In other words, they played and preyed on one's emotions and getting whipped up into some kind of frenzy and then just dropped you dead on the ground. So you see, when we expose ourselves to things like this over and over again, whether they're within ourselves or outside ourselves, and in other words, internal or external, we become numb to what's going on. We become numb to our own inner experience. We become numb to the experiences of others. We become numb to the sheer delight of the reality of life and what's truly real about life. And we go on throughout our life thinking this is the way it's supposed to be, that this is what being human is. It's being on this up and down ride internally, from one thought and emotion to another thought and emotion, from one experience to another experience, always just on that roller coaster, and always trying to prevent all our points of view from sucking the blood from our necks and that sort of thing. So what we become are managers of our thoughts and emotions, and this is what we see our primary role to be. That the role of being human, the purpose of being human, is to manage our thoughts and emotions. And so we spend our days, from the minute we wake up in the morning to the time we go to sleep at night, trying to manage our thoughts and emotions, and trying to manage our experiences as well, so we have pleasant thoughts and emotions. And when we do this, then we cut ourselves off from our peaceful nature, our inherently peaceful and happy nature. We've learned that this is what we're supposed to do with thoughts and emotions, but that's only one bit of information. That's only one approach to dealing with thoughts and emotions. That's living within a very limited field of information about who we take ourselves to be that is incomplete. It's not only incomplete, it's entirely erroneous. So it isn't even who we are. That's what entirely erroneous means. It's not who we are at all. And another way of saying that is that it's a primitive belief. So this is a primitive belief. It's a superstition. It's simply going along with the superstitious beliefs of others about what we are, that were some kind of a management device or robotic intelligence that is constantly trying to sort thoughts and emotions, trying to accumulate more positive emotions and get rid of negative emotions, accumulate more positive thoughts and get rid of negative thoughts, when all the while all these thoughts and emotions are, they're equal expressions of awareness, they're equal expressions of super intelligence. And what does that mean exactly to us as human beings? Well, what it means is that each of us as a human being, we have a choice about what we want to do with this super intelligence that is native to us. And what we can do is we can focus on this limited field of information and become the manager and the sorter of all our thoughts and emotions. Or we can not do that. That's what it boils down to. We can just let all the thoughts and emotions do whatever they do, because that's what they will do. They will do whatever they do. It's just the dynamic energy of awareness. Now, if we get in there involved in them and try to shift them here and shift them there, high gear, low gear, reverse, we're going through these movements all the time like a high-speed race car driver, then we end up exhausted and old quickly. And the bottom line about thoughts and emotions is that there's nothing that needs to be done about them. And so there will either be something that needs to be done about them or nothing that needs to be done. These are the only two choices. Either something needs to be done or nothing needs to be done. To try to mix those two, something needs to be done and nothing needs to be done, it's like trying to pour oil into water. They won't mix. So you cannot mix these two approaches. You really can't mix them. If you try to mix them, for example, if you rest as awareness part of the time, but part of the time you're using antidotes, in other words, trying to fix your thoughts and emotions, rearrange them into better thoughts and emotions, then you'll just be resting part of the time. But it won't really feel like your life is a lot better. It'll be a little bit better, but it won't be a lot better, and it won't be totally free. So to be totally free of thoughts and emotions just means this. It means that all the thoughts and emotions, they just appear, and they are whatever they are. One moment it can be elation, the next moment it can be a desperate thought or emotion. The next moment it can be something totally neutral. And this is just the play of emotions, of thoughts, whatever they may be. This information that is free-flowing, ever-flowing as an expression of awareness, as an expression of superintelligence. But our role in the game is to either get in there and try to battle it out with the thoughts and emotions, or just to let them be as they are. And when they are just allowed to be as they are through resting as awareness, then they lose significance and importance as the only information that's available for making decisions and choices. So when we think that all our decisions and choices can only come from thoughts and emotions, then we're extremely limited in our creative output. Extremely limited. Thoughts and emotions are no basis for good decision making. they're only part of the information. So, you know, this would be like if you had all the ingredients for a cake, and you knew how to make an epitome cake. You had found a recipe that was the recipe for cake that everyone in the world would want to eat this cake. Everyone in the world would want to buy your cake, and everyone in the world would work all day long to make the money to buy your cake. This cake was going to be so good, so perfect, so epitome, so apex, so over the top that everyone would want it. It would be the cake that everyone would eat, and they would just have the most pleasant feeling they've ever had in their entire lives. So this is the kind of cake it would be. And you had the recipe for the cake and all the ingredients that went in it, but you just decided to use a few of those ingredients anyway. And then no one wanted your cake, not even you. So this is what it's like to rely on your thoughts and emotions, just using part of the ingredients and thinking that something's going to happen somehow at some point that's going to be salvific or redemptive in some way. And even though it never does happen, persisting in this activity of focusing on all these thoughts and emotions. Now, awareness is filled with creative vigor and vital energy. And so this is what is called the dynamic energy of awareness. And this vitality, this vital knowledge, this creative vigor is the radiance that enlivens everything. So this is the vitality that enlivens everything. Well, if you only know the dictionary description of something and you're not in touch with this creative vigor, this vitalizing influence and potency of everything, then you're cut off from your own life. You're just completely cut off from your own life. So every appearance, no matter what it is, it has these two aspects. It has the dictionary definition and description, but in itself, that's nothing. You see, that's nothing without the vitalizing influence of awareness. It's only with the actuating potency of awareness that this description is. So unless we know these two aspects, that we don't really know anything about appearances. And even if we know those two things and we understand those two things, those two aspects of every appearance, just knowing that is not going to help us in the least. What we need to realize is that being in touch with that vitalizing potency, in other words, resting as awareness, is key. So it's only in resting as awareness, as all these demanding appearances arise, that we come to be familiar with the truth of who we are. The truth of our being and the truth of all being is that it's completely relaxed. There's never been anything that isn't relaxed. So if we engage in the refusal to relax our body and mind completely, no matter what we're doing in life, then we refuse to do that. It's as simple as that. It's just an act of defiance. No, we're not going to go that way. Or if it's all we've learned, then it's all we've learned. And if we have the good fortune to hear that our natural state is to rest naturally, no matter what appears, then we truly have a choice. We can either rest as awareness. And this is the sole method in practice. There is no other method in practice. Even if you're engaging in other methods and practices, rest while you're doing them. There's nothing else to do. This is the sole method in practice, in which there's no doer from the beginning. There's no practitioner from the beginning. There's no one resting from the beginning. Even if you feel like you're resting in the beginning, you can be guaranteed that idea that there's somebody resting will resolve at some point without you even thinking about it. So, you know, all appearances, no matter what they are appearances of sheer delight. Now, you know, I would really be a ridiculous person if I said something like that and didn't have my own experience of it to back it up, right? But, you know, for 25 years I've lived this way, And what this way means is that I've gone through all kinds of things in life. So nothing about life changes. The appearances are radical, you know, they're unpredictable. We all have all kinds of things that we can't predict at all that come up. Most of the things that come up in our thoughts and emotions, we can't predict. We don't really know what's coming next. And, you know, people, I've had people born, people die. I've had serious illnesses, nearly died myself, undergone surgeries, had all kinds of ups and downs financially and every other way, just like many people do. And my life is a life of sheer delight. So, you know, what can I say? Because it is so clear to me that the super light, the super radiance of awareness is that which illuminates everything. It's really very simple. And how did I come to know that that's true? That I made a decision at one point that I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. So I was sick and tired of being on this roller coaster ride all the time. I didn't like that. I didn't like it at all. Not only that, I realized that nothing I had learned was useful. Absolutely nothing I had learned was useful. So we already have realized that I'm a quick learner. You know, no more roller coaster after the first one, and no more vampire movies. So you know, it was easy for me to admit that what I had learned wasn't working. And how did I determine that it wasn't working? Well, I got into a very difficult crisis emotionally, and I had something happen in my life that was violent and unexpected, where my physical body was put in great danger and I could lose my life at any moment, and this was completely unexpected, and I never thought anything like this would happen to me. And so I was able to get out of that situation alive, but I was left totally traumatized and in incredible fear, not just fear, but paranoia, terror, bewilderment, a feeling of total horror. And everywhere I turned within myself, I couldn't find any relief. So, you know, all of the philosophical assumptions, spiritual assumptions, religious assumptions, psychological assumptions, and beliefs about all of these things, my mental prowess, which was really well refined and developed, my ability to conceptualize things and sort them out and solve problems. Couldn't find any way out anywhere. And so when I talked to someone about what was going on, people would say, oh, well, you know, this is difficult, but this will pass. This too shall pass. And they were right. It did pass. But I thought when they said that, that they meant it would get better. But it didn't get better. It got worse. So you see that I just couldn't find any way out of this conundrum of thoughts and emotions that were so intense and so obvious. They were so evident in every single moment of my experience. It was an onslaught that I could not stop. And I felt completely hopeless and powerless. And then in that, in feeling hopeless and powerless and knowing that there was no strategy that would work, nothing that would give me any relief, not even, you know, ordinary everyday things that some people might use, like eating a cake or chocolate ice cream or having a martini or smoking marijuana or whatever it was. No, there wasn't any relief anywhere. None of the strategies for relaxation were of any use whatsoever. And none of the strategies for understanding were of any use whatsoever. And suddenly, within that time of total terror and upset, I realized that all of these thoughts and emotions, that they had the same underlying basis. and that that same underlying basis was a basis of complete relief and just a complete ease within my own being. Complete ease within my own being. No matter what appeared, I had a choice of either getting warped and woofed by whatever was going on, or to just relax and enjoy the ride. So now, you know, if on the roller coaster I'd been able to relax, maybe I would have enjoyed the roller coaster for the rest of my life. But you see, I couldn't relax. Couldn't relax in the vampire movie either afterwards. So in this time when I couldn't relax within the horror movie, within my own head, I suddenly saw that relaxation was the essence of all these appearances, that no matter what they are, that they're fed by awareness. They're fed by this complete relief that is the essence and the basis of whatever appears. And so then it, for me, I wasn't headed for any destination, so I didn't know there was anything like complete relief. I didn't know that that was the case. I just enjoyed the relief when the thoughts and emotions came up that were so demanding and pressing, whatever they were. I just allowed them to do their own thing. And what I found in that was that they were all free in their own place within this infinite field of complete relief, this vast expanse that is completely unknowable and always completely relaxed, and the essence that is the natural order of everything, that if I just enjoyed that, then everything was fine, everything was okay. And in that, I found something very interesting. Whereas I prided myself on my intellectual prowess and prized myself for my accomplishments and been very hard on myself for all the things I didn't accomplish that I wanted to, and never saw any end in sight of either of these two. In other words, the drive to accomplish and all the things I couldn't accomplish. So this was another thing I was realizing, that this was endless. You know, this wasn't anything in my youth I could see as coming to any resolution ever, no matter how long I lived. And so it was not going to be resolved. And so, you know, what I found was that in this complete relief, there is a comfort, a wisdom, an intelligence that is beyond all of the spewing and spouting of thoughts and emotions. And at the same time, it's the essence of all thoughts and emotions. So this is something that's utterly indescribable. It's utterly indescribable. It cannot be described effectively. And in that is an immense power and an immense force of creativity. So if you only see some of the information, like in my case, all my thoughts and emotions and my attempt to create a life out of them, and you know, actually I had done quite well a lot of the time. But then I could also see that it would never lead anywhere, so it was kind of a cruel beauty. And I just didn't want to go that way. Well, the more that I just allowed the rest of this great relief to be the case, no matter what appeared, the freer I felt. And I also found that naturally I was becoming a nice person. So my drive to be a good person and to do everything right, something I could never achieve, suddenly was just emanating naturally. I found it to be naturally occurring, that in this relief and rest, there was a naturally occurring wisdom and compassion and an ability to sense, see, and feel like never before. So that was amazing to me, that I could sense, see, and feel like never before. And the way that I could sense, see, and feel like never before was so profound to me that it was clear to me that there was no turning back from this relief that I had found and just resting as that. It was just so clear to me that that was the way to go, even though this was something I had never heard from anyone. So I had never had this suggested to me by anyone. I had never read about it in a book. It was just something that naturally appeared in my mind stream. And so this showed me that it's in the mind stream of everyone. If it's in my mind stream, it's in the mind stream of everyone. And I found myself suddenly being able to do all kinds of things that I'd never been able to do before. I could create on an entirely new level that wasn't available to me at all before. Not at all. I didn't even know it was there before. Completely, totally blind to it. So, you know, this became very interesting and compelling to me, and there was nothing else I wanted to know about. And I was happy to be beyond all those encyclopedias, books, even the internet, because I've been on the internet since, you know, the early 70s, a long time. So, and I found that very interesting, but it was even beyond the internet. You know, it wasn't called the internet then. And I could see that this was the source of all creativity, the source of all creation, and that to just rest as that allowed me to be more creative in a very practical way in my own life, that no longer was I ruled or governed by my thoughts and emotions. They became less and less significant and important to me on a daily basis. They just no longer were the only information that I relied on. Whereas at one time they had been the only information I relied on, with maybe, you know, a brief opening of forever peaceful illumination now and then. But that too was just another point of view. It wasn't anything special. It was just another point of view. In finding this, I found that I was capable of contributing and being on an entirely new level, and a level that was completely beyond conventional constraints. So, you know, no matter what society might say, or no matter what books about this, that, or the other thing might say, I could read any of those books or listen to what anyone had to say, and I could consider that as part of the information within the field of information, but it was always clear to me that that wasn't it. You know, that wasn't all. But just like my thoughts and emotions were only part of the information for me to be able to rely on, this was true about everything. And I could, from then on, every single book I picked up, I could completely analyze and understand it. I could see exactly how the points of view came about in the author, and I could see the trajectory to which they would lead, clear as the light of day. So this is something I hadn't been able to see at all before. So it was very clear to me that there was incredible authority in what I had discovered. And so I just kept resting as awareness, and then after a while it was just obvious all the time. I didn't need to try to rest anymore. So you see, what had always been there, it was just in the background without being noticed. I'd never heard about it, never learned about it, didn't even know it was there. But once it was acknowledged, and then acknowledged repeatedly and diligently, then it became the obvious reality, the obvious impulse of everything. And so in this way I came to see that all these descriptions, no matter what they are, all the thoughts and emotions, they really are equal, and that their essence is awareness. They're completely equal. Now, if I try to parse and nuance life into just being all these descriptions and trying to decide how they all fit together to make sense or create meaning, then I'm lost in a tailspin of that kind of activity forever. Forever lost in a tailspin of activity. And so I chose just to rest. I'd given up. I'd given up. I didn't want any of it anymore. No matter how much solace and comfort my socio-economic status or my notoriety or lack of it or anything else had ever brought me, it was of no comfort to me any longer, and I had no desire whatsoever to try to contrive meaning out of it ever again. Not ever again. And all my questions like, what is life, what is intelligence, what is art, all of these things, they were all answered. In a single moment, all questions I had ever answered were answered definitively. And boom, it was just like every thought, every emotion, every experience I'd ever had passed through my mind stream in a single instant, and I could see that it was all the same stuff. It was never anything but the stuff of stuff that was going on, the rest of rest, as everything that appeared. And so, in this simple way, I became convinced that there was another way to live, a timeless way of living. And that anyone who chose that timeless way of living would begin to be able to see that out of their own awareness everything came. That awareness is the forerunner of everything. And that there's no awkward way necessary to express this. In other words, you don't have to stop using personal pronouns or twist your vocabulary into some kind of weird vocabulary that almost no one on earth can understand. That just in the relaxed naturalness of being, everything is a sheer delight. And when we learn that about ourselves and grow familiar with it, then our creative output is much greater. But who knows what it'll be? It could be anything. You're a professional pianist, and so that's your expression. And who knows what it'll be? Who knows what it has been for people throughout time? There's only one person, in fact, that I've read about. You asked about artists and what are conventionally or traditionally thought of as artists. Well, to me, everyone is an artist, but for a moment we'll talk about traditionally what are thought of as artists. And the poet Rimbaud, now, he was an incredible artist. He was a brilliant poet, one of the most brilliant poets who has ever lived. And, he only wrote poetry till he was 19 years old. So all of this poetry he wrote that was and remains to be just some of the most incredible poetry ever written, he wrote by the time he was 19 years old. And after that, he never wrote poetry. Well, now, what is there about Rimbaud's poetry that is so profound, that is so intense, that when we read it, we're immediately sucked into the realness of ever being? We know everything that's ever been known just in the resonance of this poetry that was written by Rimbaud. Well, what is in that is his revelation to himself of the equalness of everything. So he was able, through just resting beyond all conventional reference points, to tap into that which is the source of all words. And then in just resting as the source of all words, he was able to create these bouquets of words that had never been created before, an entirely new form of expression, and there was never one like it before, and there has never been one like it since. And so what did he do after he was 19? Well, now this is very interesting because I've read everything there is to read on Rimbaud. Everything. I've read all of his work, and I've read everything that has been written about Rimbaud. And so there, all of his biographers have all these different takes on Rimbaud according to their own points of view. So you see, whatever they're writing about Rimbaud according to their own points of view. They're not really writing about Rimbaud. They're writing about their own points of view about Rimbaud. And so what really happened to Rimbaud is he stopped writing poetry completely. He moved from France to Africa, where he became a postal worker. Now, some biographers leave off at that point that he became a postal worker. Well, only one person ever really explored what Rimbaud actually did. So he became a postal worker for a short time. He was just enjoying that, putting mail in slots or whatever it was. And then finally he became a Sufi sheikh. So he had realized who he was, and he then ended up teaching other people who they are. And this was just his form, you know, through his creativity. Now, he could have gone on writing this poetry forever, but I think I know what went on for Rimbaud. I think he was writing this poetry, and then he had this great revelation of the underlying basis of everything. So then he just took a break and had a job working as a postal worker. And in that time, he probably asked himself, well, what am I to do with this that I have realized? He just asked that question. What am I to do with this? Am I to write more of this poetry that probably almost no one will ever read? Because really very few people ever read Rimbaud. No matter his greatness as a poet, very, very few people ever read his work. And so he probably thought, well, no, you know, I probably can't benefit many beings writing poetry like this. So what I can do is benefit beings by sharing this message of what I've found to be true about the nature of reality. So, but it could have been anything, you know. This is just the case of Rimbaud. For someone else, it could be something else. But no matter how creative you are, based on a limited field of information of your thoughts and emotions, if you continue to rest as awareness, your powers of creativity will exponentially increase. And it doesn't matter if you're an artist, a pianist, a composer and librettist, or whatever, an executive recruiter, yoga teacher, or on the wait staff and brilliant thinker of Balinus, or, you know, whatever you are, you know, your powers of creativity will exponentially increase. Interior decorator, flower arranger. I don't want to leave anyone else out now, so I'm going to try to include everyone. Nutritional consultant. Did I include everyone now? Does everyone feel acknowledged for what their pursuits are? Or someone in the room just likes to relax all the time. So that's all he likes to do. He likes to relax and eat and read sci-fi books, and it's really even too much of an effort to go for a walk. So, you know, it doesn't matter what you're up to. When you just rest, your creativity is many orders of magnitude greater than what it was before. So what does this mean in a practical way? It means all of a sudden you see all kinds of new ways of doing things. Now, this is what I noticed for myself when I was young. Please turn that off. And that all of a sudden I could see all kinds of other ways of proceeding, not just the ways that were informed by thoughts and emotions. So once I saw that all of the information there is, no matter what it is, that is awareness, and it's included within my own awareness, then all of a sudden I was no longer limited to to problem solving just based on my own thoughts and emotions, or the thoughts and emotions of other people who were relying on their thoughts and emotions. Instead, there was the vast expanse of possibilities to draw on for problem solving. And the problem that it appeared to me to solve is this problem of people realizing their true nature, of people really being able to become familiar 100% with awareness, with their own awareness, and to approach that in a way so that every human being on earth could understand what was being said, that there wouldn't be anyone left out through oddball language references and conceptual frameworks or whatever it might be, that there'd just be plain spoken language that everyone everywhere could understand, that with no cultural specificity or references, just anything that anyone could relate to. And so, you know, what that was the problem that came to me to solve. And for other people, it could be anything. Who knows what it would be? But I can tell you this, that whatever it is for you, you'll start to see all kinds of new ways of doing things, no matter how long you've been in your rut. All of a sudden, you're going to see yourself peeking out over the top of the rut. And then pretty soon you'll realize you've never been in a rut. That the rut was just a point of view. So all of this comes from resting as awareness. And you know, the question was asked about avoiding relationships. Well, what the 12 Inquiries teaching, which is one of the great freedom teachings, states is that the primary activity of belief in points of view as having an independent identity is avoidance of relationship. So what that means is that if we believe points of view have an independent identity that can rule us, in other words, we think our thoughts have an independent identity that can rule us, we think our emotions have an independent identity that can rule us, we think other people's thoughts and emotions have independent identities, an independent nature of their own that can somehow affect us or rule us, or that if experiences can disrupt our well-being and peace, then if we believe that, then we're avoiding relationship with the true nature of reality. We're avoiding relationship with the true nature of the reality of that no point of view, no matter what it is, has an independent nature. No thought, no emotion has an independent nature. No experience has an independent nature. All appearances, no matter what they are, all phenomena whatsoever, are governed by the law of impermanence. That means that they vanish naturally of their own accord, even though they may seem to have a long time frame, something like the sun. Even the sun will burn out after 20 million years. So everything, no matter how permanent it may seem, is completely impermanent. When we rest as awareness, we go beyond these conventional ways of describing things. In a simple way, it can be said that we can just see a lot more. We can see a lot more. We can see a lot more than we've ever seen before. And no matter how long we live, every day we live, on that day, we will see a lot more than we saw the day before. So this isn't something where you reach a point of exhaustion or stasis and then you're just in some kind of static condition from that moment on. It's ever effervescing of itself. There's no end in sight. Awareness is uncaused. It has no point of origin. And as it's uncaused and as it has no point of origin, it also has no point of cessation, no point of coming to an end. So in getting familiar with that, we support ourselves greatly. We support ourselves in being attuned to the true nature of reality. What could be better than that? And in that, in a simple human way, we just have a balanced view. We have a balanced view of ourselves, and we have a balanced view of everybody else. We can really see what's going on in the world, and we can contribute to it in a powerful and effective and unexpected way. So a way we couldn't have expected before, we can suddenly see. And then we can contribute in that way. So, you know, it depends on what we want. It really depends on what we want out of life. If we want to keep trudging the same old road, then where are we going to be if we keep trudging the same old road? We'll be on the same old road. That's where we'll be. Yeah, now many of us learn, oh, yeah, this is just the way life is. It's filled with ups and downs. It's filled with stress. This is life on life's terms. But, you know, who said that? What kind of a life did they have? You know, go and look at what's the kind of life some of these people had who said these things. You don't want that life, believe me. If you really know what life on life's terms means, it means that what life is it's just the creative vigor of everything. If you just look at what's around you, and you just get in touch with what's looking, then you see, when you really look right now at what's looking, you know, what's looking really? When you look at what's looking, you see that what's looking is what's seeing you. You know, it's not only seeing all this, what's looking is seeing you too. And then if you just rest as that, if you rest as what's looking, pretty soon you see that what's looking isn't limited to you. It's not trapped within the skin line of your body. It's never been trapped there. It just seems as though it is because you've trained yourself to believe that it is. That's all that's gone on. And because you've been exposed to a lot of other people who have trained themselves to believe the same thing. But if you just rest, and no matter what somebody says to you, you know, somebody might come up to you and say, oh, well, you need to do this or you need to do that. But it doesn't matter what you do. Your own circumstances, no matter what they are the perfect opportunity for rest. Whether you're in a high-stress job or doing nothing. Whatever your points of view are, whatever your thoughts and emotions and experiences, they're a perfect opportunity to rest. I know this without any doubt. And believe me, if you rest, soon you will be resting without trying to do so. And this will come about quickly. No matter how doubting, cynical, skeptical you might be right now, if you keep resting every day as is being suggested here, 3 years from now, I can guarantee you, you'll come to me and you'll say, I didn't think it would ever happen to me, but it has. Who cares? Probably not, but I mean, how old are you now?
57.
Well, okay. What's 3 years then? But what I'm saying is that resting as awareness is the swift and sure approach. Do not be fooled by thinking you need to do anything else. Say you've been praying all your life. Now, that's one of the things I did. I had prayed all my life on the roller coaster in the vampire movie. Post-roller coaster, post-vampire movie. I've been praying all my life. What I found out was that, you know, the word prayer, it means petition. So I found out the greatest petition, the ultimate petition, is to rest. You know, I just petition myself to rest as awareness. That's the ultimate prayer. So meditation, the same thing. What is meditation? It's complete meditative stability in all of life. That means complete equanimity, a completely equanimous nature no matter what is appearing. That's what meditation means. What is the ultimate meditation? To rest as awareness no matter what's appearing. So any of these words or any of these things you might be doing, just ask them what the ultimate of that is. You know, what is the... Say you're a pianist. What is the ultimate expression that can be played on the piano? What would that look like? Say, you know, you're considering the whole field of music and you've always thought that music is only comprised of certain things. Well, just ask yourself, is it true? Is it true that music is only comprised of certain things? Is there something beyond what I know about music that I can see by resting as awareness? Now, my experience is that with every single person I've ever known through the last 25 years who has rested as awareness, that they come to see amazing things about life and reality and their own career and expression that they had never seen before and never would have seen if they hadn't started resting as awareness. So you see, it's worth it in many ways. Not only do we become totally peaceful and equanimous no matter what's going on, but also we don't any longer stay tethered to all these self-references about how every moment of our life, what is it really about for most of us? It's about being a benefit to ourselves. That's what most of us have as the reality of our life. And even if we decide to be of service or benefit to others, the primary motivation is to be of benefit to ourselves when we really look at it. This is what I saw in myself. But when in resting as awareness, the tethering stake of being self-obsessed is completely pulled loose. And what is left when it's pulled loose is just like with Rimbaud, you know, what he saw was to be of great benefit to many beyond what he had seen before. Who knows, maybe he continued to write poetry and burned it or whatever. Who knows, maybe he just had another way of being with that. We can't possibly know, but what we can do is discover within ourselves our own genius, you know, our own super intelligence of our strengths, gifts, and talents that are just waiting to be expressed in a new and wonderful way. And most of us learn that we can only be successful if we do, make a lot of effort. And when we just rest, we find, wow, a wonderland of expression. We find so many possibilities of expression that it's like walking into a store that has everything we could possibly want, and it's all ours. We can have anything that we want in this store. And then it just becomes a matter of choosing. Ah, this will be the expression. This is what will be offered. And you know, it's like the storehouse of great benefit. So it's no longer all based on these self-obsessive, self-concerning interests. It's all based on just the natural unitariness of everything, the seamless flow of everything as it is, in which there's never been anything separate. Where all sounds are self-sounds of awareness. Now, you know, for you musicians, wow, you know, if you've thought musical notes really are something, what do you think about musical notes once you realize they're self-sounds of awareness? They're just self-sounds of the vast expanse of basic space. That's what they are. So, you know, the more that you relax, the more you see a whole new way of looking at everything. And then you have the complete enjoyment of being able to express that in a tangible way. What more could life offer? All these things that are of total concern to most people, like money, Now, most people, one of their obsessive self-concerns is money. How am I going to hold on to the money I have? How am I going to get more money? And how is this going to happen until I die? So, and for a lot of us, then we want to accumulate money. And once we've accumulated money, no matter how small or how great, we'll want more. We'll want more accumulation of money. So this we could call the worshipping of money, believing that money has an independent nature and that money is somehow in control of us. This is really what we all subtly believe, or many of us, that money's in control of us. And so when we rest as awareness, this thing called money that we thought was so demanding and that was so much a thing that we somehow had to master, we find ourselves never thinking about it at all. You know, if we do think about it, it's just in an incidental way, but it's no longer the obsessive thread of concern throughout every single moment of the day. And not only is it an obsessive concern through every moment of the day in the present, but it extends into the past and the future. So the obsessive threads are running everywhere. Ah, isn't that amazing to just never think about money other than just as a toy, you know? It's not even a toy, you know? It's equal to everything. Equal to everything. And then to find that you have more money than you ever thought possible just by resting. Wow, that'd be quite a role for a financial advisor. People would come in and you'd just say, yeah, well, just rest.